Welcome, my audience, to Gluck Radio. We are here today with Rory Sassoon and with our engineer, John. He only has a first name, John. The person who was supposed to be here wasn't, and therefore we are just ad-libbing this as we go. But we're going to have an amazing show because I'm sitting with two amazing people. Now, what we are going to talk about today, because it's so relevant, is we're going to continue on from what we talked about last week, and it's about relationships. It's about relationships in marriage, out of marriage, but what actually causes people to be fulfilled with the divorce rate that is skyrocketing, with most people lonely. And loneliness, by the way, I was telling a patient this, number one reason in 1970 people actually went for haircuts, John, was guess what?
So it was the 70s?
No, it's because they wanted to be touched.
Oh, okay.
People are really lonely.
Like it.
Okay, and one is lonelier in a relationship that doesn't work than when one is in a relationship, or not a relationship at all. So let's ask the first question. We talked about what makes a good husband. I'm going to ask the first question to Rory. Rory, what makes a good husband? Now, you have a good husband, right?
Thank God I do.
Charles, you listen to this?
I hope so.
Okay. So what makes a good husband?
First of all, there are a couple of things. I think that when a man makes a woman feel secure and safe, that to me is the number one thing. And that also becomes about respect, trust, love. I mean, the list can technically really go on.
Actually, let's slow it down because what you said is so profound and so important. I actually want everyone, to just take this in. We tend in this society and in most societies to become most abusive to the people we're closest to. We will curse our family and argue with our family, and we're good to our friends and we're better to strangers. It should be just the opposite around. You mentioned the word making a person feel safe, and you're right. If a husband doesn't make a wife feel safe, he's going to get a depressed or an aggressive woman.
But that's where it comes also down to validation. Every person needs to be validated, male, female. Everybody wants to be.
So back to safety. Tell me, how does your husband make you feel safe? What does it mean?
It means that no matter what happens, whether I'm my best, I'm on my A game, or I'm at my worst, he's always going to make me feel like, don't worry, it's always going to be a better day.
Okay, so listen to what's being said out there, audience, because you know what? I don't want you to go and point your finger in your spouse's face and saying, you don't do that to me, because that's not the point. The point is that making a person feel safe means you're thinking of them before yourself. What a novel idea. And you're accepting the fact that everyone has good and bad days. It means that you're playing catch and not tennis. You have to take the time to know not only the person you're with, but the range of their emotions. Now, this is why, by the way, you shouldn't jump or rush into marriage. It should take some time.
So, I always think it should take at least a full year. So at least see someone in crisis mode.
Talk to me a little bit about your dating with Charles. How did he make you feel safe when you were dating him? How did you know he was the one?
Because by the second date, I was completely myself. I was able to tell him all the things that were a little bit of the dark secrets, so to speak, and there was no judgment.
You told him about that foursome?
Threesome.
For the record, we're kidding. Okay.
Everyone, we're kidding.
Okay. So the bottom line is what you did is you laid the cards out on the table. Now, I personally, you know, would basically tell most people that there is something that has not been mentioned, and we should mention it. And that is that if you're not a whole person yourself, if you don't work on yourself first, your relationship is not going to fix a damn thing, okay? Meaning you have to be happy within yourself, and I think that was one of the secrets for you, Rory, is that you had a good sense of self.
At that point in my life, I definitely was more of a whole person and ready for a relationship like a Charles relationship, which was the marriage for me was the end game. So I would also say that being vulnerable, you know, so many people have their guards up, but there are certain people that come into your life. There's a chemistry where you're able to, like, all of a sudden the wall comes down. That's a good sign, Errol.
That's a good sign when the wall comes down. John, the engineer. John, we're not married, right?
Not yet.
But we're in a relationship.
We're in a 5-year-long, very serious, committed relationship.
Okay. What?
So does she make you feel safe? Do you make her feel safe?
I do make her feel safe.
Now, outside of being a really great guy, why? I mean, what do you do?
You know, she said every other guy she ever met besides myself, similar to what you said, Rory, she couldn't be herself around, and that I was the first guy who made her feel like herself.
It has to be easy. It just has to be like all of a sudden, like, we're comfortable. We could sit on the couch together. We could hang out. We could be in our sweatpants, and it's just there's no judgment. We're having fun, and we love each other for who we are and for who we're not.
For those of you who want to simplify this, is that when something fits, there's not a lot of hard work into it.
Well, it's effortless.
You know, now, for those who are in a relationship already and it's a lot of work, it doesn't mean you have to end it. It means you have to, number one, look at yourself and ask what has to change and go get the help. But then it means you have to also ask, if something is too much work, are you trying to put a square peg into a round hole? Acceptance, what you said before, is really profound. Even on your bad days, he accepts you. Okay. Now, you mentioned the word respect. How do you show respect to your husband?
So let's say there would be something. My husband is, I asked him, it's funny, I asked him the other day. I said, if there was one thing you had to change about me, what would it be? And very quickly he answered, spend a lot less money, darling. I said, all right, if it's only one thing, that's not so bad. But I know that I know my boundary. And I think that everybody in their relationship with their significant other needs to know their boundary and really not disrespect them by crossing that.
Let's cut out the word
Don't even worry about all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, though. No. That what you said is, again, very important. And when we talk about a boundary, we talk about the expanse of what makes a person feel hurt, threatened, or scared. And each person has a different boundary. That's why some people are afraid of being poor, why others are afraid of being unloved, why others are afraid of not being alone. So there are different boundaries. And the fact that you took the time to recognize what his boundaries are, and maybe he told you them, and maybe he told you them after you crossed them, but the fact that you were able to say that I care about you, that I am not going to purposely put you into a place where my behavior is going to cause for you to be uncomfortable.
Correct.
Okay. So that's why what it means out there for crossing boundaries, not to make the person feel uncomfortable. Now, it's important to say this because there are people who very often will find someone who they try to nurse and not love and nurture. It is my strong opinion that you don't marry the mission field. You want to be a missionary, be a missionary. Don't marry the mission field. Don't find someone you feel bad for. Don't find someone who you want to try to fix. Find someone who truly 1 + 1 really makes 3. Okay? So respecting a person's boundaries, also remember this, you're going to find out that people's boundaries change over time. Okay? They change, just like their values change. You know, most 18-year-olds, they tend to lean to the left. Most, you know, once they go through college and they have to pay back loans, they tend to lean to the middle. And then when they buy a house and they have kids, they lean to the right. It just changes. All right, so what are your boundaries?
I would tell you that I am very into, I like when a person, when I feel respected, I don't like to be smothered. I cannot handle that. If I feel like a man is too possessive or jealous, that's a big turnoff for me. So if I feel, you know, protected is one thing. Possessive and jealous is a whole nother.
Jealousy, by the way, is a disease. If you have jealousy, you need to get help, okay? If I had to choose between alcoholism, cigarettes, heroin, and jealousy, jealousy is the worst out of them all.
That's Damn. A deal breaker.
Do you like that one, John? Hey. John, is your girl jealous?
No. Well, I'm not going to say if she is or is not, but I am not. I have the zero jealousy gene in me.
Me too.
Chalk it up too.
Well, three non-jealousy people. Too bad we don't have someone representing jealousy. Now, have you ever heard of someone saying these famous words? You make me blah, 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 blah. You make me angry. You make me feel insecure.
That was the ex-husband, not the husband.
Now, why shouldn't that be said? What should be said is when you do this, it makes me uncomfortable. Because unless the person, and there are people who are vindictive, who personally, when they get hurt, they either get depressed, aggressive, or quiet. Everyone gets something different, okay?
What do you get, Errol?
When I get, it's a good question. When I am feeling, what's the feeling you asking me for?
When someone says to you that they're lashing out at you, they're making you feel uncomfortable.
I actually try to understand what their motive is and what it is that they're hurt about and try to fix it. I don't take things personal. That's the bottom line. I just don't have that gene to take it personal. I'm not really normal in that way, you know. Because at the end of the day, when someone's hurt, I never ever intentionally would want to hurt anyone unless some mugger is attacking me in the street, which would not be a good idea on their part. But
don't mess with Dr. G.
Don't mess with Dr. G. Okay. But if someone is angry at me, I try to take the time out to find out where they're right and where I could do it better. Okay?
I like that.
So it's about my personal improvement rather than be defensive. Because when you're being defensive, actually what you're doing is covering up insecurity.
That's another big problem in relationships. When you have one that would be more insecure than the other, don't you find that that's also a turnoff?
Well, you know what? Insecurity, let's understand this. Now, you, well, John, you pointed at yourself.
No, just go back to what had been said earlier, is that that's one of my biggest things in my relationship, I would say, is that you have one person who can be very much in that one way and one who's very not. So the chemistry between those two things is like a firestorm.
Well, get a little personal here. What are we talking about?
All right, sure, John.
All right. So last night, beyond engineering for this wonderful show, I own and operate a recording studio, which allows me to stay up till very late at night working on music. Last night, the course of conversations from my girlfriend's phone went something like, "I'll be home at this time. Call me. Where have you been? It's getting late. Fuck you. I hate you. Where have you been? This is weird." It just kind of escalated one after another after another after another to the point where the last one was just, "Fuck you." And then that was that.
And that was how she ended it.
That was how she ended it. And then I talked to her at, you know, 6 a.m. and she's just like, "Oh, yeah, I just had a drink or two. I don't know what made me say all that stuff earlier."
Oh, by the way, number one, the definition of addiction is you know you're addicted when your personality changes.
Yeah.
It's not when you keep on doing something, it's when your personality changes.
But that's interesting.
Now, what does fuck you mean? Let's understand that.
Okay.
There are different kinds of fuck you. One is, "I don't really care about you. Go fuck yourself because I don't care." The other is, "Fuck you. You frustrate me. I don't believe you." The other is, "I don't accept what you're saying is true." Okay? Give me something that I could really grab hold on. So it is better, by the way, if we learn to use the right language to get the right results. So honestly, why was she mad that you came home late?
It wasn't that I came home late. It was that we try to touch base at least once or twice a night, and that I had missed the base touching phone call.
You
so to
missed
speak.
The base touching. This is really interesting. We see couples fall into patterns.
Oh yeah.
Okay, and then they notice when the pattern is broken. Like every Sunday morning, you make me bacon and eggs. What the hell happened today? Well, I have a cold. Well, you're not that sick. I don't see you sneezing. I don't feel good. I don't know if I believe that. Okay. So when a person says, I don't know if I believe you, what are they saying? John, what do you think they're saying?
I think they're saying, I don't trust you universally. And that just, in general, just don't trust you.
I agree with that.
That's absolutely true. Now, here's what they're also saying, because that was great, John. They're saying, I don't trust you. They're saying, you probably are avoiding a fight by not telling me everything. You are probably manipulating the situation because you don't want to hear my mouth. Mm-hmm. Or you are lying to me because you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing.
All of the above.
Right?
That sounds right? None of the truth, but okay. All of the above, though.
So here's my suggestion, honestly, to those husbands out there and to those wives out there. Tell the truth.
Well, the have truth an
honest
fight.
Have an honest fight. If you're going to have an honest disagreement, okay, that's the way you know whether or not you're in something that's right or not right. Okay, meaning some people don't like to have to twice a day make the phone call.
It's exhausting.
Okay, meaning I call when I want to and I don't call when I don't want to. Now, if someone says to me, if my partner says to me, it means a lot for me if you could find time to call twice a day, of course I'm going to do it if it's said in that light.
Well, okay. Like you said, it's, you know, in a sense, it's all how you frame a situation. If you're coming from a place of being kind and being good and saying it would really make me happy, as opposed to saying you better do this or that, you're already, your defenses are up when someone's saying that to you. As opposed to saying, sweetheart, do me a favor, just check in with me when you get a chance. I really want to hear your voice.
Well said. One of the other things that are, what, by the way, let me ask this out. For you as a woman, not only speaking for you, but speaking for women in general, what do you find, women find sexy in a man? And I'm going to ask the same thing of you, John, in a woman. What do women find sexy in a man?
You know, it's amazing because as I've gotten older, I always thought it was about the looks. The sexiest thing in a man is his confidence.
Uh-huh.
When a woman feels that a man has the confidence and he could do anything, nothing sexier.
So we're defining now confidence as a belief in one's ability to always survive and conquer.
Always.
Okay, good. What else?
I love when a man also has a sense of humor. Doesn't matter what he looks like, but he just cannot take himself too seriously and just laugh at himself. It makes a woman feel comfortable right off the bat. And she could just be herself. Who wants to be in a relationship with another actor?
Now, John, a sense of humor is important, right?
I would agree, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only problem when a sense of humor is not important is when you're the only one that ever finds yourself funny.
Okay, but the woman's finding him funny, so that's good. That's a good thing.
No, but the ability to actually laugh and have a good time, not at someone's expense.
Never.
Okay, but at the fact that life is ironic. It really is full of irony. And if you can't see the irony in life, and if you can't play, and if you can't get dirty, and if you can't realize that you're going to have the proverbial pimple, and it's not necessarily the actual pimple, but that could just mean a blimp in what's going on in your mind, then it's very difficult if you can't absorb that problem within other people.
Well, Errol, I have a question for you, and John as well. What do you guys find sexy in a woman? What's like your number one quality?
John, you answer that first.
Well, I like you said confidence earlier, but to take that up a notch, I want to say somewhere between confidence, playfulness, and openness in that you're not closed off.
You're not
introspective. You're like, hey, I want to be the center of the party without being the center of attention.
I like
tremendous curiosity. I like what's sexy for me is the person who really wants to learn and explore something new. And what's really sexy is when a person could turn everything into a learning lesson. They don't have to win. It's about what can we learn? How can we just take whatever it is and have fun with it? Because you know what? Steak could taste as good as hamburgers. It tastes as good as dry bread if you make it fun. So I like the ability. I find very sexy in a woman who could go both ways.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I have to put a laugh track in there.
That can mean many things.
They're all the same.
You know, but it is, in a sense, it is the openness to actually explore different ideas and that they've developed their own belief system and they're still not carrying the ones of their parents. They're still not carrying the ones of their friends or their college or their job, that they've actually taken the time to take a look at everything around and formulate their own belief system. To me, that's incredibly sexy. John, what do you find that you fight the most about in your relationship?
Ooh. I guess the varying standards of commitment, we could say. I guess, you know, that story that I just gave is a small microcosm of some of the things that I experienced.
So let me just elaborate on that 1 second, and Dr. G, tell me what you think. This is her reasoning and her insecurity for the checking in. And when he's not there to check in, she feels abandoned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah,
totally.
100%.
Totally.
100%. See, it's interesting because normally I would say that it is always better to find someone who is on your same wave level, you know, because it does create less tension.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth of the matter is almost all disease is linked to stress. And if you could be in a relationship, it should be one that doesn't stress you out.
Amen.
Okay.
Oh, amen.
Meaning you really want to just have fun or learn. And sometimes it is good, and I do respect this within a person, when they could be by themselves.
Oh, yeah.
When they could even take a vacation by themselves. I mean, I think that's great. You know, if my wife says, listen, I'm taking 5 days off or 10 days off and I'm going somewhere, I'm loving it. Not because I'm not going to miss her, but because, you know what, if she's doing something for herself, that's wonderful.
Well,
and she gives, you know, she would give me the same ability. But you have to be able to be with one another. So what happens is so many couples, when they have kids, all of a sudden it's all about the family. You can't make it all about the family. You still have to have us time, just me and you time.
Well, I'm a big believer, and I say this to a lot of women out there. I said, if the bond between your husband and yourself is not strong, there's going to be no bond. The children are going to grow up. They're going to leave the nest, and then it's you too. If you weren't taking those vacations and making those date nights and having that time to spend together alone, let's fast forward, you know, when the kids are out and about and in college, there's going to be no relationship at that point. You're going to have nothing in common. So you better nurture that.
You better nurture it or you're going to have empty nest syndrome. That's absolutely true. So what do you do when there's something that's bothering you and you get afraid that it could be a deal breaker and there's a family involved and, you know, there's kids and you know, life is complicated. How should one approach the issue? Let's say sex is a very important thing in a relationship, right?
Yes.
Let's say one of the persons, they gets diabetes and all of a sudden can't perform. Or they gets cancer or something. What does one do? Everyone has a different view on it. Okay. My particular view is that there are so many levels of love that when one door shuts, there are multiple caves of love and intimacy that have never been explored, and that if they're explored, you're gonna reach new heights. But that's just my point of view. Rory, what's yours?
That's actually a really good question. I agree with you. I think that, you know, people who have built a life together in a family, it's really, I think, first and foremost about that. It's so much deeper on an emotional level that, you know, the sex is obviously very important, but there has to be another way to be able to make the relationship flourish. There's definitely counselors and people that, you know, couples can speak with, but I definitely think it's something that could be worked out.
Right. And you know what? When you need counseling, okay, make sure the first thing is that you're going to someone who you actually like, and that it's not about the person's values. It's about how could they get you from point A to point Z. Because I'm really that it's a very touchy subject. I do coaching. I don't call it counseling, because what I do is give people a plan of how to actually move their life along, as opposed to investigate under a microscope what went wrong and nothing really ever changes. I just want to emphasize the fact that in the same way that Einstein said he only used 6% of his brain, and they find out that the average person uses less than that, it means that there's so much more to our brain, to our life, to ourselves, that when you feel safe, when you communicate in a non-threatening way, you're going to really get the best out of that person. Now, Rory, we have a business that puts people together who pretty much are together themselves. Why should someone who is successful, attractive, in their 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s, why should they actually use your service?
Well,
I'm going to say your service for the purpose of I'm doing the interviewing.
Well, it's our service.
I know, but I'm doing the interviewing, so it sounds, you don't want to make a plug for myself, but yes,
no, it's okay. It is our service. I would say to you, because in life, sometimes divorce can take up a lot of time in a person's life. It also changes the type of person that they can become. Hopefully, they're not bitter, and we can be able to avoid those problems. But we at Platinum Quad do all the vetting. We do a personality profile, as you know. We do background checks. We make sure people are who they say they are. So we are able to match people based on the inside before the outside, which at the end of the day, as you would always say, that's what will sustain the relationship.
I think we also do, and it is true, I do the forensic profiling, and what happens is we make sure that it's not a round peg in a square hole. We make sure that you're not just going for the looks. We make sure that you're able to look 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 years out and say, you know what, I could grow old with this person. If you can't see this person old and still like them, you're not with the right person.
Definitely.
Amen.
Right?
Amen.
You have to actually do that. All right, so let's talk about this. How do you, in a dating relationship, for those who are going to be listening to dating, how do you break up with a person?
Well, not by Post-it, like on Sex and the City. Or by text message.
Oh, my God. That happens?
That happens.
What is the best way to break up with a person? I'm going to want everyone's opinion. I want to start with John. How would you break up with someone?
Put all the luggage and the clothing in front of the apartment on the curb, right? Isn't that what everyone does?
Is that what you would do?
No.
Okay, so what would you do?
Gosh, Dr. Gluck, I'm going to have to edit this if I can't think of something good to say. I don't know. I really don't know. I failed miserably at trying to break up one time before in my life. I don't know if I'm the best one to be given this advice.
Rory, how would you break up with someone?
Piece of cake on this one. So I really, truly do believe honesty is the best policy to a certain extent. I don't think that there needs to be insults that are flying. But what should happen is the communication. You can simply say, I feel that in this relationship, we are no longer bringing out the best in one another. Whether it's he or she is feeling more disappointed than not in this relationship, it started out great, but not so much anymore. So I feel like you'll save each other both a lot of aggravation, give each other the freedom to be able to move on, and hopefully, like anything else, everybody should learn from their experience.
You know what? I like the way you put it. Here's the caveat. The caveat is I'm going to suggest that no one put words in anyone else's mouth, because you say that to a person and they're going to say, that's not true. But if you say to a person, you know what? You don't bring out the best in me. You don't make me the best person that I could be. And I feel that my life with you doesn't give me as much value than my life without you. Now, it's more painful, but you know what? It's a clean cut, as opposed to we don't, you know, bring out the best in us, because you know what? Maybe you do bring out the best in the other person.
I was just trying to be a little bit more tactful, but I hear where you're going with
you
that.
What? You know what? Let me explain this. Tact is for when you want to keep a relationship. When you want to keep an arm, you be very skillful in the way in which you connect the veins and the arteries. You'd be perfect, actually. When you want to cut off the arm, you just take a hatchet and cut it off. When you want to end something, make it a clean cut. Don't let the person think that there's maybe hope. Don't let the person think that, you know, maybe if they just try harder, it's going to work. Take the hatchet, cut it off. And I mean it, the relationship. Don't cut anything else off, okay? Just for those, you know, passionate people out there. Because what happens is you think you're doing a person a favor by saying, it's not me, it's you. It's not you, it's me. You're not doing them a favor. Because then you're telling them if they change, something could change. Now, is it possible that the person could go and do some work on themselves and down the road it could change? Anything's possible.
So it depends. If you don't want to burn a bridge.
But don't make that promise. Okay? You know what? Burn the bridge. If another bridge is built organically or by itself, then it's built. But this gives the person the chance to grieve. This gives the person a chance to start fresh. And this gives the person the chance to go and say, you know what? I have to do something with my life. What do you think about that, John?
I think that's great. I like all that.
You just gave John some great advice.
Honestly, that you kind of just gave me the last 5 or 6 years of my life got laid out. A burned bridge, an organically built second bridge, and here I am talking about it on the radio.
Okay. You know, what's the key to good sex? Now, I'm going to ask John that question first.
Oh, man. Oh.
And John, then I want you to ask Rory the question.
The key to good sex is
great sex,
is honesty.
John.
Honesty. Good. A communication of desires, of wants and non-wants and fantasies and stuff that doesn't ever want to be explored. Good communication superseded over the whole thing. That's what I'm going to say.
That's such a male answer. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know what? He's a guy. So go ask her.
Rory, what's the key to good sex from a lady's perspective?
I'm not talking about good. I'm talking about great.
Great.
That was the question.
Great.
For me, I find that the key to great sex is, yes, the obvious communication, but there needs to be an emotional connection.
100%.
So if there's no emotional connection, to me, sex is a form of communication. You have that connection. You're comfortable. You're able to be yourself. There is no judgment. You feel free. Like you said, you can play. Sex is like being a child. You're having a great time. It's amazing. It's non-judgmental. You feel that you're both on the same page. Nobody's, you know, everybody just feels that they could be themselves. And that could take you to all different levels, whatever it is, whatever your pleasure is.
You know what? Well put. Well said. A bit advice that I'm going to give women, you know, and men. Don't give instruction. Move to the right, move to the left, up, down. Because that is the greatest way to see the man go, the South will not rise again, okay? You know, that's not happening. What you can do is just use your, like, your mouth. If something feels good, make more noise.
Moan a little.
Okay?
Yep.
If something doesn't feel good, you know, remind them, you know, when you did that before, it was just so amazing. Just bring them back to the positive. Nothing negative. Sex is regression. Sex is play. Sex is best when there's no measurement of time, intensity. But you're right. There has to be an emotional connection, because otherwise you're looking to just run away afterwards, and that's not good sex. People, you know, I've seen this with a lot of single people. They said, oh, yeah, I had good sex, you know, but I ran out the next moment. You didn't have great sex. What you had is an experience. It's not lovemaking. It's just an experience. And, you know, when you're 17 and 18 and 16, you know, or 20, whatever age you start, that's sometimes the way it begins, but it doesn't really work as you get older. You really want to kind of get to know the person and you want to be able to go to Fantasyland.
Well, when you love someone, you also want to be able to, it's not even about you as much. You want to be able to satisfy the other person. When you just run out the door, it was all about you. You got what you wanted and you left.
All right, so what happens? What happens when you want something, both male or female, since I have Rory the woman, John the male, that the other person is not comfortable doing and you really want it?
Let's say
John, you're really into oral sex and your girlfriend's not. Like, you know, what do you do?
I guess that harkens back to my communication thing from before, but I don't know. I got nothing for that one. You hit a brick wall, you got to accept that everybody's built differently.
Can't
fit a square peg in a round hole.
What do you do, Rory?
We just show him how, oh, so much better it could be. And when we do that, hopefully he takes
the
bait.
Listen to what the girl is saying. There's some interesting wisdom here. What she's saying is, don't tell me you don't like the food until you taste it.
1,000%.
Okay. You know, and don't tell me that you can't acquire a taste for it. I remember when I took my oldest child for sushi the first time at 15, she hated it. And then when I took her again, like literally 3 weeks later, she didn't like it. And then she liked it. And now it's like her favorite food. Sometimes it's about taking one for the team and exploring and letting the other person have some pleasure and realize that maybe you could get into it. Right?
Right.
Okay. So let's go now to dating tips. It'd be a great first date. And how did you act on your first date?
A great first date. I think you should have all the hallmarks of classiness and fun. So, you know, you figure go get a nice glass of red wine somewhere and then go bowling at some, you know, place in Williamsburg with a beer hall attached to the bowling alley, and then get late night noodles somewhere, and then hopefully you stay over and you wake up the next morning. That's just me.
Okay, Roar, you're on your first date.
Okay, so normally a lot of times the typical first date that we hear from all of our clients is they like to go for a nice dinner. But I'd like to take it up a notch a little bit. And I think that you really get to know someone and you get to see if there's sexual chemistry when you're dancing with them. So I always find that that's a little more romantic. It's more flirty. It's more playful. And you really just get to really see a personality.
You don't really know if there's real chemistry until you kiss them.
True. But the dancing is touchy and you can see where we're going with that.
So do you, Rory, kiss on the first date?
I don't kiss and tell, darling.
John, do you kiss on the first date?
I did. I might have kissed before the first date, honestly.
Errol, do you kiss on the first date?
Always.
There you go.
Always. Because you know what? If there's nothing in the kiss, there's nothing in anything.
Yep.
That's true.
The sooner you know that something is worth pursuing, then you pursue it. If lots of women, and this is really sad in New York City, they use these dating sites as a way of supplementing their income by getting free food. For those of you who do that, I hate to say it, but shame on you. Don't do that. You know, if you really want to go out with someone, make sure there's real interest and make sure that you're not a taker, but that there's an exchange of giving and taking. Nothing is 50-50. That's just not reality. But if you give all that you can and they give all that they can and it works, that's good enough. For some, it could be 70-30 or 80-20. It all depends on what a person is capable of doing. Okay? Where does money fit in to relationships? Considering it is the number one thing that people fight about. Not sex, but money. Why, Rory, do people fight about money?
Because I think that people have a sense of entitlement. Depends on really your culture, where you come from. When you're getting married, are you the type of couple to row the boat together? Or is it the old-fashioned way of the man is the provider and the woman is the caretaker of the children and the home? So those things need to be established before you really get into that type of a relationship.
Rory, do you know how the lion and the lioness work?
Please enlighten me, Errol.
Okay. Lions, by the way, are monogamous. Okay, but they have more than, they're not monogamous. They have actually three or four in their pack, but they're monogamous to those three or four. The female lionesses, they go out and they capture the kill, drag it to the man. He sits there, eats about 200 pounds of meat at one time, and goes to sleep for 3 weeks.
And
what's wrong with that?
Depends if that works for you, darling.
Okay, so that's not going to work for most people. But what is going to work is that even if you don't have a lot of money, you should show that you have a lot of class. Do something that makes the other person feel that, you know what, I'm contributing. You know, when I went out with Morella, she did not have a lot of money. She did everything in her power to give as much or more than I did by going out of her way and making dinners, you know, figuring out what it is which I like and making my life easier. And that's, you know, you don't always have the ability to give the same thing, but you should always have the ability to give something.
Well, that's also a way of a person showing love. You know, that's what their skill set is. That's what their capability is. They know that, you know, you're out hunting and working and she's home keeping the home and being able to, like, have a great, gorgeous dinner when you get home. And that makes you happy.
Right. Now, that works. You're absolutely, absolutely right. And you know what? We shouldn't really say the old-fashioned way, the new-fashioned way, because today in some cultures that's the way it is and in other cultures it's not. You know, you go all around the world, it's different things for different people. But you have to be on the same page. What should you never do in terms of fighting? Okay, I'm going to ask John that. What should you never do in terms of fighting?
You should never say things when fighting that you will regret years down the line, not just a week later. That's the best I can come up with right now.
Oh, so you're saying the woman should not say you have a small penis?
Yeah, she shouldn't.
Right. You know what? I actually had one. I'm doing this for 40 years counseling, and one of my first couples that I counseled, and I asked her, well, what's the problem in marriage? And she said, you know, he has a really small penis. The guy, it was over. He just
done.
It was finished. Okay. There are things that you never say because you never destroy a person's sense of self. Okay,
yeah,
you stick to the issue. You don't get vicious. You don't bring up every other time that the person disappointed you. You keep things relevant in real time. All fights should be in real time. If you say, I forgive you, the next morning, don't bring it up again. If you forgive it, you let it go. What do you think about that, John?
I think that's great.
Rory.
That's where resentment comes from. Like you said, you agree. 100%, I agree. I also would tell people that the D word in a marriage should never come up unless you're willing to really go there.
Okay, and by the way, Rory does not mean diamond.
Divorce. The D word should come up, actually.
She's Jewish. So she doesn't mean diamond. We just want to understand that. She means divorce. Why don't you say divorce?
You don't say divorce unless you're really prepared to go there. A person should never be threatened with that. That's a boundary that should not be crossed.
You know what? Not only do I agree with you, Rory, but I want you to take it back. A person should never be threatened.
A person should never be threatened.
Okay. And a person should never be stopped by saying, you know what? I need some time and space. I'm taking a walk. Don't jump in front of the door and say, no, you're not.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Because guys, very often... Guy, and this is true, guys very often need to collect their thoughts just like women do. And other people, you know, are hot-headed and they say things they don't mean and they can't take back, and not everyone is thick-skinned. Some people are really thin-skinned and they remember, you're right, don't say something that the next day you can't take back. Now, let's talk about compliments. Let's talk about how do you use your words to make a person really feel safe and secure. Rory, how do you do that?
Depending on, are we talking about our spouse or just, you know, anybody in general?
No, spouse or boyfriend.
Okay, well, Charles, I have a spouse. No boyfriends.
No, but you could talk about when he was your boyfriend, and you could talk about when he was your husband.
Well, I always try to tell him as was my boyfriend and now is my spouse. It's funny. We actually were out for dinner last night, if I could tell you this story. And I said to him, in life, I said, you have given me so much to be able to help me with a career. And his support and just his intelligence on knowing how to deal with a person like myself, like I said before, smothering for me doesn't work. And he gave me the freedom and the independence to really help me evolve as a person. And I just, out of nowhere, just started talking about that. And he just said to me, Love, I really appreciate that. It really makes me feel so good.
You know what? When a person feels genuinely appreciated, that is so important. And I know that when my wife says to me that I give her the opportunity to grow as a person, I challenge her. Okay. I am, admittedly, no one would want to be married to me. I'm just difficult because I'm very strong-willed and I have a very rigid and set belief system, and that even though I'm able to accommodate a person, I am always going to, in the end, not compromise and do what I think is right. And very often couples do compromise. And I find when people compromise, everyone's miserable.
But I want to disagree with you a little bit, because I'm a partner of yours in a business. So it's kind of like being married in a different way. I would say that true what you say, that you are rigid. But if somebody is right and they make sense to you, you're always the first person to
right,
say.
Right, because they're right and they make sense.
And they make sense.
Oh, it's easy for me to say I'm wrong. That's the easiest thing in the world.
But at the same time, you will also respect whatever it is that the other person wants. You don't need to compromise. You can say, you know what? Hey, you're right about that.
See, here's my belief, and this is what I mean by that. I believe that you live your life and you're born and you die on your own terms. And that if you take your identity and you're not true to it, you're going to end up hating yourself and hating the other person. For those of you who are out there, this is important. There is a Bible verse that says life and death are in the power of the tongue. You can create life by your words, and you could take it away by your words. When I, by the way, say don't compromise, what I mean is don't compromise who you truly are. I don't mean don't enter into another person's experience, because, oh my God, that's the best and most fun thing to do. It's like visiting a different country. Men and women are different. Each person is different. So going into their world as deep as you allow yourself is the best thing you could do. But what you don't do is you don't trade your deeply formed belief systems just because it makes another person happy. That's what you don't do.
I agree with that 1,000%.
Wonderful.
Well, I'm going to say we're going to wrap at this point. We're over our time. John, Rory,
Dr.
a great show. What I'm going to say is that everyone should go to gluckradio.com and listen to the podcasts. You should pick out your favorite podcast and tweet it to different people. If you are seriously wanting to grow as a person, or if you have a difference of opinion, I want to hear about it. If you find yourself in the position of not finding the perfect person in your life, Rory wants to hear about it, okay? Because you know what? The sun does shine brighter when two people look at it and not one. That's the truth. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, master problem solver, and here for you. To reach me, go to glucksolutions.com or call 212-599-3195. Till next time.